4 for the Eagles here. Murphy and shotgun. Here's the snap. He rolls left. He throws.
WZBC Sports.
Welcome to the WZBC Sports Podcast, episode 7 of season 2, and we're back for part 2 of our inside look into the college basketball recruiting scandal that has made quite a wave, I should say, in the top tier programs in the NCAA, and maybe some more even to come. So we're going to dive a little bit deeper into the programs that are affected and what comes next for them. Obviously, these are some top programs, Miami, Louisville, USC, some teams that have been really successful and then have pushed late into the tournament over the last 10 years. In particular, Miami's on their way up. Louisville's always been good, and USC's making somewhat of a resurgence, among other teams. So we're going to talk about that a little bit, and also dive into where the FBI may take it from here. Are more scandals looming? Could Nike make its way into this? And finally take a little bit of a look at BC, if there's any possible involvement there, and also a little bit of a look at the team as the season is not too far away. I believe they open up on November 10th against Maine. I should have that in front of me, but that sounds about right. So Steve Mackley, Matt Shingold back to talk more about this. So Matt, let's get right into it. Let's talk about these top programs. What is the immediate outlook for the teams that are implicated, at least the big ones? And based on this outlook, should we expect a weaker Louisville or Miami or USC? I mean, CBS Sports just released their rankings of 1 to 351, every college basketball team. USC cracks the top 10. Miami cracks the top 10. Louisville is 18. So that's just right there, among other schools. UCLA, they're an Adidas program. They're at 20. Now, I'm not so sure if they're involved, but there's a lot of involvement here. So these teams are good. What's their outlook now that this is really coming into the light?
I think this year may be a little bit of a feeling out period when it comes to this. I don't think programs like Miami or USC necessarily will feel this year upcoming, solely because players aren't like transferring out. If there's no like a huge jumping of ship going on. Louisville, on the other hand, you lose a Hall of Fame coach. Quite frankly, I think they do have the talent, they might go into this season and just kind of take a steady dive down. I'm not saying they're not going to sniff the tournament or anything, but I think it'll become somewhat of a toxic situation, possibly. But I think these programs will feel this more so down the line when you see more and more high quality recruits decommitting, and then some recruits in the future maybe not even like thinking about these schools because they don't want to get into the cesspool that may become of Louisville or Miami or some of these other top programs due to their involvement in the scandal.
Sure, yeah. And although a lot of great programs in all the sports have been touched by scandals before, the ones that really hit hard can, at least for a time, ruin programs. I mean, I think to maybe the best example is SMU football. When they were really good in, I guess, the 80s, and they got the death penalty for all of their numerous allegations and troubling involvements. And SMU has, really not been good ever since in really any sort of facet in college football. And I think when you look at this for Louisville, this is, again, just another record in the book for Louisville about having really questionable people at the helm and questionable decisions. And, you do wonder that if they can't replace Patino, with a coach that I think, A, has a high moral standing. I think even for Louisville, they need to say, look, we might cut some corners on things. That's maybe just how we do it, and that is what it is. But they're going to have to find someone who's going to be an exemplar for the program. And if they can't land that, or can't land a guy that can at least recruit somewhat like Patino did, this has been a lot of trouble for them. You wonder if this could really hit them hard for a while.
Yeah, and I think you've seen whenever a program that's so high profile like a Louisville or a Miami gets hit by these sanctions like of the type, they want to go through a culture change. And so a culture change would endure coaching changes, AD changes, stuff like that. And a lot of times it does not work in the way that the program would hope. The first thing that comes to mind for me would be the I wouldn't call this a scandal, more so just the Len Bias issue over in Maryland with cocaine, which apparently was rampant with many different players within the program. And the head coach for Maryland, Lefty Driesell, apparently knew and didn't do anything about it, so he just kind of looked away and was very negligent, and it ended up costing someone's life, and others were sent to jail. So Maryland, in response, wanted to go through a culture change, and they got rid of Driesell, and they brought in a, I'm forgetting his name right now, but he was famous all around the state of Maryland, used to coach at Dunbar High School, and coached many NBA players when he was there. And they were hoping to, with him, to bring in someone with high character, high morale, or morally focused guy who's going to focus on the person, not just the player. And unfortunately, that ended up backfiring because he began recruiting players in a, I think it was almost an illegal benefits situation where he would be paying players for their acceptance to the school and stuff like that, much like is going on now. So I would say to that, tying it back to today, some of these programs will attempt to make these huge, big-scale culture changes, but it's really a lot more entails than just firing and replacing people.
I think there's a lot of institutional issues that run a bit deeper at Louisville. So, you know, the path forward for them is murky right now. You can use examples of SMU on one side or Penn State football on another that, you know, not much more than, you know, 7 or so years later after what happened with Paterno and Sandusky and that whole issue, which is about as bad as you can get in terms of scandals and illicit behavior. They're back to being one of the best teams in the country. So, you know, Louisville has the platform there, but whether they can then fix that, and I think, just make somewhat of an institutional culture change, we will have to see about. It can be daunting to think about where they are, and that a lot more is yet to come out. And if we look at that, what is next to come out? I know that we've talked about, and you've said that what's next with the FBI is still a bit unclear. They're still kind of, being close to the vest on what they're doing. But what do you know about the next steps for the FBI? What are they looking into?
So from what I've seen in different articles around, the FBI appears to be looking into other shoe companies. The beginning of the findings that we saw at the beginning of the month were solely focused on Adidas for the most part. And now there's an article coming out that Nike's version of the AAU circuit, the EYBL, is reportedly under FBI investigation. So I think you'll see other big-time schools that are under the Nike umbrella beginning to have their issues come to light. USC is a Nike school right now, so I would assume that some of this has to do with them, just because they've already been mentioned. The rest would be purely speculation, but it'll be interesting to see how these programs have been kind of infiltrating the AAU scene, and even these high-up executives, see if they're much in the same light, guilty of, or maybe not guilty, but have allegations towards them in the same light as Adidas had in the previous scandal or the previous findings.
Yeah, I mean, that would be seriously something if they could, you know, directly implicate Nike into this. And just taking, as we talked about in the last podcast, taking a deeper look at the way these shoe companies, not even just shoe companies, the way sponsorships make their way into the AAU circuit, that, you know, again, let's remember, these are high school players. And by that, I mean, these are kids. And you know, you do almost, I almost hope, and maybe this is just kind of an opinion on like the love of the game kind of thing, you know, play to play, not for the money. You hope that they can clean up that aspect of it. If it does go this far, if it really is, if Nike's out there doing stuff, and you know, so is Adidas, and who knows what Under Armour's doing. I mean, they're still kind of new to the shoe game a little bit. But like I said, this kind of almost goes all around with sponsorships. Take a really deeper look and how far does that go, and will they correct that? But you know, talking about Nike, you know, it's pretty big to me to think if they were to be really implicated in this, and they were, because I mean, you know, Nike is one of the best brands in the world.
Nike is king when it comes to basketball.
Yeah, I mean, they have all the, you know, all the best shoe contracts with all the best players. They just won the NBA deal. They have most of the best college basketball programs. I mean, certainly the majority of them. I mean, you know, the two come to mind, Duke and UNC. Obviously, UNC's Jordan, which, you know, is pretty much Nike. They have a great presence in college football with a lot of those great teams. So, like you said, they're king. If they were to be implicated in this, I mean, I have to think that in some ways college basketball could crumble. I mean, and then, you know, that's a big statement, and I there's a lot more to it than that. But you do think that if Nike's found to be up to this sort of behavior on the scale or with the kind of money that Adidas was up to, and again, there's still a lot more to uncover, you'd think that so many programs would be affected by this that we could be looking at a very different landscape.
Yeah, and I think that if Nike is to be implicated with this, and the NCAA wants to kind of rid themselves of these shoe companies, it'll be very difficult because basketball, college basketball will be, the face of it will be changed as we know it, because these shoe companies, for as much of the shady things they may be doing, they are paying for huge portions of these facilities and, I mean, jerseys, shoes, merchandise. It's just a lot of revenue stream that's coming in from that, from Nike, Adidas, whoever, that will change a huge portion of the game, and it'll cut funding. And quite frankly, let's say they switch from shoe companies to some other kind of funding, like we see in the NBA now. They have sponsorships on their jerseys at teams.
Yeah, I think 14 of the 30 teams have it, yeah.
Yeah, so let's say that's the case. What's saying that some random company like a StubHub with the Sixers won't be paying, let's say, a college, paying the best athletes to come to that college so they can promote their brand by seeing, like, oh, StubHub is on, let's say, BC's uniform, and now we're very good. And that's another way of informally promoting your brand.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, to think about how long it took for sponsors to come to one of the four major American sports, in this case, male sports. Soccer does it. I believe the WNBA does it and have been doing it for a little bit. But that took so long just to get to basketball, and it's still not at baseball, hockey, or football. And I don't think it's close. I haven't looked into this issue. But then you think about, wow, like coming to amateur sports and college baseball. And it just gets back to this point that the way these programs function, you know, even mid-tier Division I teams, the way they function, this is so much beyond amateurism. And again, that's not to say that everyone is being paid or being cheated. I mean, some do cheat it, but this is, I say this all the time, and this, the scope of what college sports were meant to be, I think, we are so far past that, that it's not that hard to imagine sponsorships outside of shoe companies coming on to the jerseys of players and paying the program to get players in there. But it does. It's totally contrary to what the amateurism NCAA profile is. So it's crazy to think about.
Yeah, and I think that just because it's so contrary to the amateurism profile that we're so used to, I don't think that's necessarily a negative, and I don't think you were saying that. But I think a lot of people don't want to kind of disengage from the norm that is like, oh, you go to college, you play your best, and then you can go on to the pros and make money. But I feel like if I'm a college athlete and I'm bringing in money and I'm bringing people and I'm putting them in seats and people are buying my jerseys, I don't see why I shouldn't get a cut from that or some kind of stipend or something like that. Obviously, the issue and the solution are very far apart, and there's no one correct solution. But I feel like just because college sports have been this way for all of this time doesn't mean we can't change it slightly or major changes just to make it a little bit more fair for these players.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there probably is more equity to be passed around. And what I didn't say, which I think is important to be said, while college sports and college basketball and football in particular are, like I said, so far past what they were originally meant to do, they are not simply just co-curricular things in college. They're a job. When you look at the professional level of college basketball, of basketball and football, the college proving ground, while it is for a small amount of players that can go to the professional level, it is a tremendous proving ground. And even in some of the other sports like hockey that have more of a minor league system, or baseball, in some situations and for some players, if not the majority of players, college athletics is a great place for development of the player that sits in between, still kid-like athletics and the professional level. So college athletics serves a great purpose. This is not simply like something that sits side by side, I think, with professional sports. It is not the same level. It's a different product, but in many ways, I think they could probably operate similar. In some ways, they could operate similarly. But that's not to say that, we should do it with college sports and just like make them all professional. It is an important proving ground for these kids. But there probably are a lot of changes that will need to be made on one way or the other, whether you're going to pay them or not. I think, again, what we talked about, this brings to light that a lot of things could be changed.
Yeah. And another thing that, that kind of connects a lot of this is the salaries that these coaches are being paid. A lot of them are making seven, eight figure salaries every single year. And for a NCAA executive to just kind of like look right past that and kind of diminish the fact that these players aren't doing anything for their school. Well, they might not be saying that nothing is being done for the school from the players. They know that these coaches, or not the coaches, the players are kind of left out of the equation, whereas they're kind of acknowledging the coaches more so than the players. Whereas, let's say you look at the NBA is more of a players game, whereas college basketball is more of a coach-centric game. There's more intricate sets. There's more focus on the team as opposed to the individual. And I think that the fact that the college sports has been shaping up so that it's focused on Coach K or Roy Williams, that is helping to personify the disregard for some of these players' rights, or not rights, but what should be allowed in today's game.
Yeah, that is a great point, to draw that distinction between the two. The NBA coaches simply can't work their players in the same way the college coaches can, and I get that. I'm totally cool with that. I think that's a benefit of the college game. But I think that probably hides it a little bit when the face of these programs are not a single player, because even if you have the greatest player in the world at Duke, he's probably only going to be there for a year, and you have a new face the next year. So the what these teams stand behind are their coaches, and that may manipulate public perception a little bit. When still in the end, it's the players making the product. So interesting to see. I do want to turn to something that I'm bringing up mostly for fun. I'm not in any way implicating BC into this at all, nor has Under Armour really been implicated. As I said, Under Armour is pretty new to the game, but BC is an Under Armour sponsored school. If we look at it, Matt, is there any correlation between BC players and their AAU programs being Under Armour sponsored, and anything we can draw from that?
From what I've seen, none of the players have been really have played for these AAU teams that were Under Armour affiliated. So that correlation that you may see at a little bit of a more obvious situation like a Nike or an Adidas school isn't necessarily the case here. Our two best players, Kai Bowman and Jerome Robinson, are actually from the same area, played on the same AAU team.
Interesting.
In North Carolina, which is Team Wall, an Adidas team named after John Wall. So those two obviously didn't play for an Under Armour team, but this is just like random connections. A lot of these coaches will have, these AAU coaches have connections to coaches at the next level so that they'll contact them like, oh, we're playing a game around here. Like, are you going to be in town just to watch? And that's nothing wrong with that. It's just, that's how you might see like some of these guys that, will follow a former teammate to a new school or to their future school because they know someone there, they see the comfort level they have there, and the other players vouching for the coaching staff and the student life and the team as a whole and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a good distinction. And I think for what AAU programs are, I mean, those kind of connections that players can make to, you know, players that they play with or coaches can make for kids to, you know, on behalf of certain programs or whatever is something that should be in place. And certainly that, again, that's not a violation, as you said. It doesn't surprise me. I didn't think there was gonna be much there with BC. I know that it's been a tough road for him, but I really am a supporter of Jim Christian. I'm not necessarily sure if he's the guy for the job, but I do respect him, especially when I compare him, and this is, you know, maybe I'm going to be eating my words a little bit on this, depending if they keep playing well, but when I compare Christian to Steve Adazio deflects everything. He can't take any sort of criticism, and I think maybe it just had to go with the job because they've struggled so mightily, but Jim Christian, I feel like, embraces, you know, when the team plays bad or when we don't look good, he kind of keeps that, you know, with him, and he accepts that. So I didn't think that he was going to be the kind of guy that was going to go be, you know, making some sort of, you know, illegal recruiting moves or using Under Armour to do that. But glad to hear that BC probably will not be bringing up in this.
Yeah, and I think another thing to keep in mind is that BC hasn't had such like high 5-star recruits in a long time. AJ Turner, who recently transferred, was a 4-star recruit, I think, and that was probably our highest since probably a while back. So just that alone would probably make you think that we haven't been touched by this. But at the same time, Jay Billis and Jay Williams have all said that, you know, they wouldn't be surprised if every Power 5 conference Power 5 conference team has had some touch of this. Maybe they haven't been paying players through their shoe companies, but you know, maybe they've been recruiting in some way that they shouldn't be able to or something like that. That it's just this issue is so widespread that there really it could be the case that nobody is safe.
Sure, and on the flip side of that, from what I just said about BC, in a lot of ways, and I'm not saying this is Christian or a staff, I think this would just be anyone in BC's position that in the same way that you could be great, you could be a great team, and you want to keep those great players, and you feel that to get the best players, you need to cheat and pay them. At the same time, you could be one of those teams that's really struggling, and that is a ton of pressure on the program, and pull out all the stops, whether it be cheating or not, to get those players in there to bring your program back up. So it could happen to the best, you know, the Louisvilles, the UNCs. It could happen to the most struggling in the Power Five, whether that be BC or I have to think about some other teams that have kind of been down for a while in the Power Five. But I mean, BC, you know, obviously is the one that, you know, we talk about here. So who knows how much that it could have affected all of them. But you think at this level, there's pressure on every Power Five program, and pressure from the outside in all walks of life can lead to questionable ethical decisions. Hope BC, you know, we're not saying that they're involved in that kind of thing, but just to provide some analysis on it, you know, that is something to think about. And we'll see if Billis and those guys are right.
I think the case may be that, like, some schools will be implicated, some will not. But if this does come out to the point where the NCAA is finding things on over 50 or more schools, it may come to the point where these points are just moot, and you just kind of have to change the whole landscape as it is, because you can't put 50 teams on probation. You can't give 50 teams the death penalty. That's just unrealistic.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe at that point, the NCAA will see that there's a flaw in their business model.
Yeah, and if that day comes, it will be a momentous day for college sports. You know, and I think that day could be coming sooner than some people think, even if this scandal does not explode. We'll have to see about that. Before we wrap this up, you know, we were talking about BC a little bit, and let's just talk about the team a little bit. There is a BC basketball preview podcast coming out pretty soon. But you were at the Bryant scrimmage, which I could not get to. BC released just a couple days before that they were going to play Bryant. This was last Saturday in a scrimmage for was it for Hurricane Relief?
Yeah, Hurricane Relief.
Yeah. So what did you see from the team? They won pretty big. And any expectations for them?
Yeah, I thought the team looked very good. It's nice to see that we have some older players now that are our leaders, like a Jerome Robinson, who's now a junior, our best player, most likely. And in years past, we'd have, well, I mean, I'm only a sophomore, so I've only seen last year, but last year we had two fifth-year seniors who seemed to be our quote-unquote leaders, even though they weren't exactly our best players or even at times capable of producing night in and night out. So it's good that you have a player who's not only leading vocally, which I could see during the scrimmage, but he's also leading by example. And I think Kai Bowman, with another year of development, is going to be, the two of them could form one of the best backcourts in the ACC. And then you see some other guys, some big guys, which we really were at a deficit for last year. Nick Popovich looks like he's packed on some muscle. Looks like he's developed his game a fair amount. And then you see freshmen like Stephon Mitchell, who everybody's been raving about. He seems to be all over the glass and just seems to be like a really good hustle player. So it'll be interesting to see him. And then we've got Chapman again. He exploded a few times last year for big games, 6 or 7 threes a couple times. So it's always good to have a lethal scorer like that who you can maybe even bring off the bench if some other things work out, which I think would be preferable, just to see, just having that scorer, proven scorer who knows what he's doing, come off the bench could be huge.
Yeah, I agree. He had some just unbelievable games last year, and I'm excited for them. I when the AJ Turner transfer came out, I was skeptical about what was happening within the program, and I thought this could really be the demise. I mean, it's tough to imagine Jim Christian putting together a recruiting class after one of your best players transfers like that, and the pressure's going to be on in his – this is his fourth year. It's tough to imagine them kind of getting past what they did last year. But I with some of the transfers that they've gotten some of these freshmen look like they could be pretty good. If Bowman and Robinson take that next step, then it could be a fun year. This CBS Sports basketball ranking that I was talking about at the beginning of the podcast ranked BC in the top 100. 99 is what they are. And last year, in most rankings, they were above 200.
Yeah.
So there's progress being made. John Rothstein, who is with CBS Sports, covers college basketball, and he covers a lot of BC basketball as well. He tweeted out a couple weeks ago that he thought that BC could have the best backcourt in the ACC. And I don't know if you heard this, Joel Berry broke his hand yesterday. It was announced yesterday. It might have been a couple days before that because he punched a door after he lost to, was it Hicks or something?
Theo Pinson
in a video game matchup. So that probably speaks more towards Joel Berry's just stupid attitude in that moment. Yeah. Maybe with him out, BC does have the best backcourt in the ACC, at least until he comes back. He's quite a player. But we'll see. I'm excited. I think if they – I mean, we know how good the ACC is. So if you can be – if you're a top 10 team in the ACC, you are very much looking at the tournament. And I'm not saying they're going to be that team. We'll dive more into that in our preview podcast. But it could be a fun year where they really look like they belong to be out there.
Yeah, and I think this year could be the step towards, it really should be a look towards next year, because this year I don't think we'll make the tournament, but I think we could really compete, maybe win 6 or 7 conference games, and then next year when Jerome's a senior, Kai's a junior, Pop's a junior, these freshmen are now going to be sophomores. I think with all of these guys getting one more year and Jerome at his apex in college, I think that could be the year where we try and sneak into the tournament. And, people may think that's a little bit infeasible right now, may not think that's possible. But I think this year, if you look over and you see us taking down a team like a UVA or competing with Duke at home, something like that, that'll probably change a lot of people's opinions and make them think twice about us.
Yeah, there's a lot to prove this year, and I think what BC's first got to do is they got to find a way to just blow through the non-conference.
Yes.
I mean, gosh, you looked at some of those losses last year. You know, one week you're beating Providence, who was a good team last year, and then you're losing to Sacred Heart a couple days later. It was maybe Sacred Heart before, and then they beat Providence or something like that. They got to find a way to assert themselves over those teams, and that's a confidence thing. That's a swagger thing. We saw opening game last year, Nicholls State. I mean, oh my gosh. So we'll see, but hopefully none of these sanctions come anywhere near BC, and they can play free basketball this year. I'm excited about Bowman and Robinson, in particular Bowman, and kind of the step he could make today. Robinson was announced as a preseason second team All ACC, which I think is a deserving honor. I think you can make the argument that Bowman maybe is preseason third team or honorable mention. BC was picked to finish 14th in the ACC out of 15. I would have thought maybe a little bit higher, but there's a lot to prove, so I understand why they're there.
And I don't know if you saw, but I saw a few articles last week that Jerome Robinson's climbing up some NBA draft boards, which I don't think he'll like crack the first round or something this year, but I think if he has a very productive year this year, comes back and has another big year, he could be looking at some opportunities in the pros, which would be very interesting just to see how he could improve further on.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be great if he could have the NBA potential but not be there yet, because that gets him obviously another year here, which I think he'll be here for another year no matter what. But if he can improve his jump shot, his outside shot, and his three-pointer, I mean, he's great at creating his own shot. He gets into the lane really well. He's a tall player who can sufficiently handle the ball. If he can become a really good outside shooter, I think he really is a special player. Speaking of outside shooting, I'm concerned that Kai Bowman cannot sustain what he did last year, especially with his form. But you look at Lonzo Ball, it's not all about form. Shooting will be a big part of this team, as it is with every team. But we'll see about Robinson. I'm rooting for him.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so exciting stuff to come out of BC. Not as much exciting stuff to come out of Louisville and those schools, but that's kind of where they're at, and not our issue. But Matt, thank you for bringing all this to WZBC Sports and bringing a lot of that insight. If you have not already, certainly go back and listen to our first part one on this issue. Talk a lot about the roots of the problem, the AAU scene, and what's going on down there, how this stuff could really happen. We will monitor the issue as we go forward. Check back if a third podcast is necessary. Maybe it is. We'll see as the year goes on. But certainly check out all of our content at WZBCSports.com and check out our podcast on iTunes under WZBC Sports Radio. Steve Magley, Matt Shangold. We'll see you next time on the WZBC Sports Podcast.
pass over to Sanford. Sanford gives it to Tuck. Tuck with a shot. Oh! Oh! Tuck scores. Eagles win. The Eagles have won the 2016 Bean Pot Championship.
Catch all the excitement of Boston College athletics right here on WZBC Newton 90.3 FM. As BC's only student radio broadcasting organization, WZBC Sports brings a different viewpoint of college athletics to the table. Our student commentators know the campus, student-athlete culture, and latest beat on the teams like no other media outlet, thanks to our dedicated coverage of Boston College sports. Check out our broadcast or weekly talk show schedules at www.wzbcsports.com and get a refreshing take on sporting events at the Heights and beyond.